Daniel chapter 4. We're going to look at Nebuchadnezzar, and he's going to be humbled today. So, Daniel is a critical book. This is the book that gives us the timing for the world, the timing of mankind. So it's a key book for understanding God's timetable. As for context, Daniel and his three friends were taken captive. They were taken from Jerusalem by King Nebuchadnezzar in the summer of 605 BC. In 604 BC, Nebuchadnezzar had a troubling dream, and he saw that statue with the head of gold and the arms of silver and the belly of bronze, legs of iron, and feet of iron mixed with clay. And then this kingdom comes out and smashes them all, and they blow away like chaff in the wind, and that kingdom is God's kingdom, and it rules forever. So Nebuchadnezzar, this non-Jewish guy, had this dream of God's timing for the nations. And Daniel explained that to him. And when Nebuchadnezzar had Daniel explain that to him, by the way, he told the wise man, "No, you're not going to just interpret my dream. You've got to tell me what the dream was first and then interpret it." And they all went, "Well, you're nuts. How can we tell you what the dream was?" Daniel prayed, and God showed him the dream. And so he explained it, and then he interpreted it. And as a result, Nebuchadnezzar said, "Truly, your God is the God of gods, the Lord of kings, a revealer of secrets." And he promoted Daniel to rule over the whole Babylon region. So if it was today, he'd be ruling over all of the D.C. region. And then his three buddies also helped administrate in that region. Last time in chapter 3, Paul taught us, and this is about 585 B.C., 9 years later, King Nebuchadnezzar made a statue of gold. And the thinking is, he was the head of gold on the statue in the dream. And in the head of gold, you know, these are the nations that are coming. Well, Nebuchadnezzar's going, "I don't want to just be the head. I'm going to be the whole statue." 9 years later, he kind of forgot how marvelous God was and that revelation. And so he built a statue of gold, and it's supposed to represent him. And he makes all the people come out in the desert. And he says, "When the music plays, you've got to bow down and worship this statue." And of course, from that, we get the story of the guys getting tossed in the fiery furnace. And Paul taught us that last week. But I want to notice Nebuchadnezzar's heart. He's forgetting God. We do that, don't we? You're trucking along and you're thinking, "Hey, man, I got it covered here." And then God kind of goes, "Hello," and wakes us up, because he loves us. So that's where we left off last week. Now it's about 582, 3 years later, since chapter 3, and that statue of gold. Let's pick it up in chapter 4, verse 1. "Nebuchadnezzar the king, to all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell on the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I thought it good to declare the signs and wonders that the Most High God has worked for me. How great are his signs, and how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation." What an awesome intro, isn't it? Does this guy sound saved? Yeah. This whole chapter, chapter 4, is a letter from King Nebuchadnezzar, and he's writing to all the people, all the nations, all the languages that dwell on the earth. It's a letter from a non-Jewish king testifying about how good God is. And he declares his personal testimony. You can't argue with a personal testimony. He's experienced it. You know, if you're talking to Jonah, swallowed by a fish and spit out on the shore, I mean, it sounds incredible to us. But it's his personal testimony. He's either lying or he went through it. You really can't argue with him. And so here Nebuchadnezzar is declaring his personal testimony when he says, "I thought it good to declare the signs and wonders that the Most High God has worked for me." And so this non-Jewish king is recognizing that God, his kingdom is everlasting. It's forever. Now, chronologically, as we look at chapter 4, this intro could be moved to the end, because now he's going to tell us the story that brought him to this point. So this is the outcome, this is the application of the story we're about to read. So let's pick it up in verse 4. "I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in my house and flourishing in my palace. I saw a dream, which made me afraid. And the thoughts on my bed and the visions of my head troubled me. Therefore, I issued a decree to bring all the wise men of Babylon before me, that they might make known to me the interpretation of the dream. Then the magicians, the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers came in, and I told them the dream, but they did not make known to me its interpretation. But at last Daniel came before me. His name is Belshazzar, according to the name of my God. In him is the spirit of the holy God. And I told the dream before him, saying, Belshazzar, chief of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy God is in you, and no secret troubles you, explain to me the visions of my dream that I have seen and its interpretation. Now, we start off with him at rest in his house and flourishing in his palace. Everything's going great. I got all the money I need. I got everything I want. I'm at rest. Wow, life is great. Look what I've done. This is a different mindset than the Nebuchadnezzar that fell on his face before Daniel when Daniel explained the other dream. Now, one question I have in my mind is, why did Daniel come last before King Nebuchadnezzar? I mean, he's the chief of all of the soothsayers and magicians and astrologers. He's the chief guy. Why didn't he call the chief first? I'm thinking for the same reason that Daniel didn't come to the golden statue out in the desert that Paul explained. And that is, Nebuchadnezzar kind of didn't want him around. He represented the real God, and Nebuchadnezzar was making himself God. So everything's going great. He's rich. The kingdom's going awesome. And he says, I had this dream. It's troubling me. Well, wait a minute, Daniel. Let me call these guys. Let me call these guys of the world first, my counselors. And they can't answer him. Finally, he goes, all right, come on, Daniel. I know that you have the Holy Spirit in you, and your God is kind of different than these guys' God. You notice in here it says, my God. He's called Belshazzar according to the name of my God. So you can see where his heart is. His heart is not humbled and broken before the Lord. And isn't that what it took for us as we became Christians? We got to that point where we were broken. Being broken is great, because when we're broken, we finally go, all right, God, it's up to you. Before we're broken, we're in charge. We're driving the car. Any of you guys remember that old song, I've been driving in the front seat? Who is that by? I see a few nods. I've been driving in the front seat, and I find it's not a great place to be. You know, and then he lets the Lord, now I'm driving in the back seat, and it's wonderful. You know, I was running all the stop signs that I see. Boy, I'm butchering this song. But, you know, I was in my young 20s, and it was the coolest song. That's when all the churches were singing hymns. So I've been driving in the front seat. Anyhow, all right, so Nebuchadnezzar's driving in the front seat. That was fun, but now I have no idea where I am. All right, at the time of the dream, he's at rest in his house and flourishing. This reminds me of rich guys today. You know, everything's going great. I got my Porsche. I got my house. I got my trophy wife. You know, this is really cool. I'm a famous golfer or something. You know, everything's great. And then, boom, God humbles them. We have a similar heart in the parable of the rich fool. And he says, what shall I do? I have no room for my crops. I know what I'll do. I'll pull down my barns and build greater ones. There I'll store my crops. And God says, fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? And the point is, laying up treasure for yourself doesn't make you rich toward God. Nebuchadnezzar was laying up treasure for himself. So he summons all the religious fakes. They can't answer. Daniel comes, and he recognizes that the spirit of the holy God is in him. So verse 10. These were the visions of my head. He's talking to Daniel. These were the visions of my head while on my bed. I was looking, and behold, a tree in the midst of the earth, and its height was great. The tree grew and became strong. Its height reached to the heavens, and it could be seen to the ends of the earth. Its leaves were lovely, its fruit abundant, and in it was food for all. The beasts of the field found shade under it, the birds of the heavens dwelt in its branches, and all flesh was fed from it. So at this point, we got a cool tree. It's feeding everybody, providing shade. It's majestic. It's just, it's prominent in the whole earth. I saw in the visions of my head while on my bed, and there was a watcher, a holy one, coming down from heaven. He cried aloud and said thus, chop down the tree and cut off its branches. Strip off its leaves and scatter its fruit. Let the beasts get out from under it and the birds from its branches. So this tree is losing its grandeur. Nevertheless, leave the stump and roots in the earth, bound with a band of iron and bronze. Now, leaving a stump, if you leave it tall enough, it'll sprout branches and grow again. If you cut off a pine tree to the base, it's dead. But if the stump is high enough, it can sprout branches. And, you know, you leave the roots in the ground so it can re-sprout. The band of iron and bronze, is it to protect the tree or is it to restrain the tree? I don't know. It's not important. We get the picture. This tree is cut down and leveled. It's not prominent anymore. And then we sort of change in our dream here. In the tender grass of the field, let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let him graze with the beasts on the grass of the earth. Let his heart be changed from that of a man. Let him be given the heart of a beast, and let seven times pass over him. This is interesting. We'll see Daniel interpret this in a minute. Seven times, I think, is probably 7 years. This decision is by the decree of the watchers, and the sentence by the word of the holy ones. So then this dream is, it's a prophecy from in heaven. It's powerful. And here's the reason. In order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, gives it to whomever he will, and sets over it the lowest of men. This dream I, King Nebuchadnezzar, have seen. Now you, Belshazzar, declare its interpretation, since all the wise men of my kingdom are not able to make known to me the interpretation. But you are able, for the Spirit of the Holy God is in you. Cool. He knows Daniel's connected to the real God, even though he's not walking with the Lord. And we see that today, where, you know, you're not a believer and you see someone and they represent God to you. You know they're close with God. You kind of rejecting. And so here we have the man that's been rejecting and wanting to run his own life, but he knows that Daniel represents God. And isn't it the case when people hit the bottom of the barrel or some tragedy happens in their life, if they know you are connected with God, who do they come to? They come to you. Will you pray for me? Well, you could pray for yourself. Oh, no, you pray for me. You're connected with God. They think that magically you'll be able to do something that they couldn't. So we see that same sort of thing going on here. Nothing new under the sun. Verse 19. Then Daniel, whose name was Belshazzar, was astonished for a time, and his thoughts troubled him. So the king spoke and said, Belshazzar, do not let the dream or its interpretation trouble you. Daniel got the dream. It's bad news for King Nebuchadnezzar. And it seems that he liked King Nebuchadnezzar and really hesitated to tell him the interpretation, because he knew this is bad for you, buddy. But Nebuchadnezzar saying, don't worry about it. Give it to me straight. Belshazzar answered and said, my lord, may the dream concern those who hate you and its interpretation concern your enemies. Problem is, that wasn't the case. It was for Nebuchadnezzar. The tree that you saw, which grew and became strong, whose height reached to the heavens, and which could be seen by all the earth, whose leaves were lovely and its fruit abundant, in which was food for all, under which the beasts of the field dwelt, and in whose branches the birds of the heaven had their home. It is you, O king, who have grown and become strong, for your greatness has grown and reaches to the heavens, and your dominion to the end of the earth. Ooh, the tree is King Nebuchadnezzar and his kingdom, but it gets cut down. Verse 23, and inasmuch as the king saw a watcher, a holy one, coming down from heaven and saying, chop down the tree and destroy it, but leave its stump and roots in the earth, bound with a band of iron and bronze in the tender grass of the field. Let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let him graze with the beasts of the field, till seven times pass over him. This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High. So who's the watcher? The Most High. When the Most High decrees something, does it happen? Absolutely. This is the decree of the Most High which has come upon my lord the king. They shall drive you from men. Your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make you eat grass like oxen. They shall wet you with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over you, till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, and gives it to whomever he chooses. Now, before we get into the literal interpretation of this, think of our relationship with God. First off, what's the motivation of this whole thing? The tree getting chopped down and him being driven from the kingdom and eating grass like an oxen. What's the purpose that God is doing this? Take a look at the last verse. Seven times shall pass over you till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men. God is doing this for his reconciliation. God, in everything that goes on in our life, works it for the good. And the good is that we would be reconciled with him. Now here we have a guy that had it all. And he's going to lose it all for a time. And the purpose is reconciliation. How many times do we see our friends or family lose it all? Bottom of the barrel. But that's when God can reach them and bring them back. And so God can use that for good. Sometimes we need to go through hard times in order to get close with the Lord. It's difficult. It's hard. And Daniel even is going to recognize this. Look at this. That's a few verses down. Verse 26. And inasmuch as they gave the command to leave the stump and roots of the tree, your kingdom shall be assured to you after you come to know that heaven rules. Therefore, O king, let my advice be acceptable to you. Break off your sins by being righteous, and your iniquities by showing mercy to the poor. Perhaps there may be a lengthening of your prosperity. Wouldn't it be better if we could just learn the message? Learn the lesson right now and not have to go through the pain? How many times have you gone through a hard thing and said, Lord, please teach me quickly so this will be over? I do that all the time. Is there any way I can learn faster? Ouch, 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 as you go through the lesson. But the lesson is good for us. So Daniel's saying, hey, man, you know, get it together spiritually. Humble yourself. Maybe God will postpone when this occurs. And of course, Nebuchadnezzar doesn't listen. Verse 28. All this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar at the end of the 12 months, so a year later, he was walking about the royal palace of Babylon. The king spoke, saying, is not this great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling by my might, power, and for the honor of my majesty? Anybody see a trouble with that? Everybody's laughing. Yeah, pride. What's the verse? What goes before pride?
Fall.
He's going to fall. While the word was still in the king's mouth, a voice fell from heaven. I've never heard a voice falling from heaven. It's happened several times in the Bible. I would love to hear it as long as it wasn't telling me, you know, you're toast, buddy. But like Jesus getting baptized, this is my, you know, son. Listen to him. You know, I dig it. I'd love to hear it. Wonder if he has a radio voice. He's gotta. So a voice fell from heaven. King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken. The kingdom has departed from you. And they shall drive you from men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make you eat grass like oxen, and seven times, or 7 years, most likely, shall pass over you, until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, and gives it to whomever he chooses. That very hour, the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men and ate grass like oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven till his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. So when he heard this interpretation from Daniel, I mean, what would you think? How literal would you take it? I mean, ate grass like oxen? Must be some symbolism or something. No, it's literal. Isn't that incredible? That to me is as incredible as Jonah being swallowed by a whale. God can, you know what? God can do miracles. When you read about the Israelites crossing the Sea of Aquaba, it's called the Red Sea in the Bible. And then you look in the back of your Bible and they have a little map where it, you know, they have these little shallow waters. And well, maybe they crossed there. We're not sure where they crossed. And then you watch Discovery and they try to explain it. Well, you know, it's shallow enough here. And maybe the wind blew and made a dry passing here. And they're trying to explain with natural means the miracle that God did. And that, I don't know what that one place is called where they think the wind blew and made the land dry and they could walk across it. And so they explain away God's miracle, but the next miracle is then how did God drown all the soldiers in a foot and a half of water? That's a miracle. But no, we saw the film where they found the place where they crossed and they found evidence of broken chariots underwater on this ridge where they crossed the Sea of Aquaba. And the only thing it could possibly have been was a miracle. Can't explain it natural ways. And here Nebuchadnezzar is eating grass like an ox. Wow. Now there is a disease called bonthropy, I guess is how you pronounce it, where the sufferer believes that he's an animal. And so there is a natural way to explain that. And their mind goes and, you know, maybe that happened or maybe God just did a miracle. Maybe he created that disease at that moment. I don't care. God got his point across. God caused him to act and think like an ox. Then when he gets it, well, let's read on. Verse 34. Oh, back to verse 33. His hair had grown like eagle's feathers. Is that their description of dreadlocks, you think? I mean, if he's there eating like an ox and his hair's growing out, what would happen to it? Wouldn't it be dreadlocks? Verse 34, at the end of the time, the end of the 7 years, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven, and my understanding returned to me. And I blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. He does according to his will in the army of heaven. And among the inhabitants of the earth, no one can restrain his hand or say to him, what have you done? I love the, at the end of the time, he got his understanding. There's enough time. Boy, it took, was it 7 years? Was it 7 months, the moon passing? Most think it's 7 years. It took that long to humble him? But he gets his understanding back. The king, proud king, now is humbled. God accomplished his purpose. And my question and exhortation for us today is, do we need to be humbled? If we do, God loves us so much, he will accomplish that. Apparently, he loved Nebuchadnezzar enough to accomplish it. He humbled him. And we can see Nebuchadnezzar came to faith in the Lord. And the steps regarding his understanding. First thing he does is he lifts his eyes up toward heaven. That's where our eyes should always be. This morning when we wake up, are we looking up to heaven? Lord, are you, you know, what do you want for me today? After he lifts his eyes up to heaven, he receives back his understanding and reason. That's a great fruit from looking towards God. Then he blesses, praises, and honors God. And as we're going to see in the next verses, God responds to Nebuchadnezzar's worship and humility. Verse 36, at the same time my reason returned to me, and for the glory of my kingdom, my honor and splendor returned to me. My counselors and nobles restored to me. I was restored to my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added to me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, and all of whose works are truth, and his ways justice. And those who walk in pride, he is able to put down. Now that's the last we read about Nebuchadnezzar. We're going to move on in his kingdom here. So we see at the end of his reign in the book of Daniel, he's humbled and he comes to the Lord. I just think that's awesome. And we have a great lesson here about being humbled. Those who walk in pride, he's able to put down. So our application today, my first thing is that prosperity can be a dangerous thing. It can produce pride. And here's the verse I was looking for, Proverbs 16:18. Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. It's truth. We got to watch out for pride. And we're really good at becoming prideful. Then God gave every opportunity to King Nebuchadnezzar to come around. I mean, the first dream was a witness to him. I could not only interpret your dream, but I can tell you what the dream was. But then he forgot and made the golden statue. Pride's back. And we know the result of that because the three guys wouldn't worship it, and so they got thrown in the fiery furnace. There's another. Who's that fourth guy in there? And how come they're not burnt? I mean, you throw the guys in the furnace, it's so hot that the guards throwing them in get burned and die, and they're walking around in there. And they come out, and the ropes are all gone, and they don't even smell like smoke. Wouldn't that sort of affect your mind and think, maybe something's going on here? Pretty powerful. So there's number two, the second witness to Nebuchadnezzar. And then he gets the dream that's a warning, but he still doesn't listen. A year later, look at this kingdom, I'm so cool, I got it all. Bling, you're an ox in the field. That adversity was a blessing to King Nebuchadnezzar. It brought him around and brought him into relationship with the Lord. And my guess is that we'll meet him in heaven. What a blessing. And it came through that adversity. He must have been a very proud, stubborn man for God to have to go to that extreme to bring him around. It would have been easier if King Nebuchadnezzar listened. We go through the same thing. If we would listen, he wouldn't have to take us through those hard times. But sometimes we go through tough things before we're going to come around. So it's just, which road do we want to do? Do we want to go through the dark times and hard times? Or maybe just the twilight times? Or maybe figure it out and humble ourselves? That's chapter 4. We'll pick it up in chapter 5 next week.